Can you give me your wind speed and direction at the point there, please?
I'm on the bridge of the X-Pilot as we make our way out of the River Medway and into the Thames Estuary, heading towards the Red Sand Forts, several miles off the coast. The captain, Alan Harmer, radios Medway Navigation Service to ask about wind speeds. If the wind's too powerful, the X-Pilot won't be able to dock at the fort where Project Red Sand is based.
Pilot Medway beat it, same, but
just
slightly higher on the gas.
Okay then, at the gas here. Thank you very much, Jim. Thank you.
So what does that mean?
16 to 20 knots. So that is about 19 to about 22 miles an hour.
So is that safe for landing?
Not really, no. No, not really. It's a bit too much.
What would be the ideal?
Maximum normally is 15 miles an hour, which would be about 12 knots.
So what will you do? We're going to go
to the Red Sand Towers and have a look. They've said that it's not going to get any higher, but it's not going to drop off. So at the moment, I'm not sure. There's always a danger of putting them on there and then on the way back getting them off.
Does that ever happen?
We've had some rough times, haven't we? In fact, we had a time when we had the BBC on there when it really did blow up hard and we had to get them off. That was a day that you don't want to repeat.
And what do you do in a situation like that?
We persevere. we got them off, but you know, you just it's not so bad taking people on and off the towers that are used to it, like Project Red Sand team, but it's not good to taking people that are not used to being at sea.
Because of the ship moving around,
yeah.
Wind, etc.
The vessel, you actually see, people can go online and see that trip we did with the BBC and see the boat heaving up and down and whatever, literally got to make a jump for it, you know. So when they're making a jump for it with the cameras and equipment as well at the same time, I'll give them credit, they kept filming all the time, didn't they?
Although we won't now be docking at the Red Sand Towers, we'll sail slowly around them to give the passengers time to take photographs. We also plan to travel further out into the estuary and visit the Shivering Sands Towers, a similar group of army sea forts, and Knock John, an old Royal Navy fort further north. En route, Captain Harmer tells me more about the X-Pilot.
She's the ex-Port London Authority pilot vessel. Her original name was Pilot, and then when I bought her 20 years ago, we renamed her X-Pilot.
Right.
She looks like a tug. Lots of people think she is a tug, but she's a tug, a pilot boat tug, stroke tug. And we've been involved in Project Red Sand for the last 10 years now, doing what we're doing now, back to the Red Sand Towers.
How did you get involved in this? How did it get started?
Project Red Sand has been going for about 15 years now. I got involved about 10 years ago, but I've always been involved with the towers in one way or another for a long while. I was actually coming out here when the actual pirates were on here. That's giving my age away now. I'm 70 next year.
Pirate radio.
Yeah, when the pirate radios were operating off the towers, back in the late 60s, early 70s, and a lot of our team, or some of our team, were involved with the pirate radio stations then, but since then the team has changed a bit, and now we've really got more younger people now involved in it now, which is what you need, really.
So how often do you go out?
We go out, well, according to how many people want to go out. I mean, we're out today, of course, and we're out again on Wednesday. But Wednesday's ship's a bit different. It's a film company, skateboarders on the top of the towers.
Right.
And it does sound very silly, I know, but this is what brings money in for the project. We're our registered charity, and we have to do these sort of things in order to bring some money in.
And so what is the aim of the project? Is it just to preserve the towers?
Yeah, the idea is to preserve the towers. The one we're operating off now, the southernmost tower, it's always been the idea for it to be a radio station. And you'll see when we get out there, there's a big area up there already, and we do broadcasts off there every now and again. We get a license from Ofcom to broadcast off there. We haven't done for a couple of years now, but that is the plan. And each tower was going to have a different purpose. Like the one we're on is going to be a radio station. The next one was hopefully going to be a seawater research station. The next one was going to be an accommodation block, then a museum. There's seven towers altogether, see?
So the function of this vessel is to take people to the towers who want to go there, but also presumably to supply.
Exactly that. We're the official supply boat for Project Red Sand. So it's a mixture of supply and equipment and such like to the towers and running passengers as well.
And are there people there permanently?
No, there's not. But sometimes we've got people on there for a week or more. Sometimes they're out there all night. It depends, you know. But the whole idea eventually is for it to be manned on a semi-permanent basis, much like you would used to have on lighthouses.
And you were talking before about wanting to get as many people involved in the project as possible.
Yeah.
And why is that?
Well, because we've got about 12 regular volunteers that work on the project. We need more people on the project. I mean, we particularly need people with some sort of skills to offer the project. We really need fundraisers. We get inquiries all the time from television companies all over the world. I mean, this year alone, we've taken Russian television out there, Japanese television out there. Last year, we did lots of American stations out there.
Why is there global interest? Are these structures that unique?
There's global interest, but there's very little interest in the UK, actually. A lot of the trips we do out here is international.
But how come these forts are so famous?
The Germans obviously take great little interest in them because they have German history. Bit of German history.
Yeah, of course.
And they are just interested in all over the world. But in the local pubs here in Queenborough, most people are not interested. It's very strange. Never really got my head around that. Even the harbour master and harbour authorities just shrugged their shoulders at it. But it's worldwide interest in it.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, last trip we did was about 3 weeks ago. We had Polish, some from Sweden, German, people from all over the world are down there, you know.
Unfortunately, when we're still about 2 miles away from the Red Sand Towers, the ex-pilot suffers only the second mechanical failure in all the years she's been travelling to the forts. A Jubilee clip has slipped off a cooling hose and the engine has overheated. While the crew try to get us moving again, the ship is left bobbing away in the Thames estuary at the mercy of the swell, with the forts tantalisingly close, looking like a cluster of old-fashioned Super 8 film cameras on the horizon. David Phillips, the secretary of Project Red Sand, tells me how they came to be built in 1942, at the height of the Second World War.
Well, they were originally designed by Guy Monsell, who was a person who the government chose at the time as to be ideally suited for the task. And he decided to try different methods. He did lots and lots of different designs and drawings, and they finally decided upon these. There were also another set similar in the Bay of Liverpool Bay.
But I mean, what was the motivation?
The motivation was that they needed to make sure London was safe, and it was decided that if we placed them in the estuary at strategic points, we could extend our radar from land out to sea, so we could see the planes coming in, the Luftwaffe coming in at the time, and shoot them down before they got into London.
And each fort originally had a gun emplacement on the top.
Yes, there's four gun towers. They're actually called gun towers, and they had a 3.7-inch gun on each of the roofs. And there was a Beaufort's tower, which had Beaufort guns. And when they were initially put out here, they were floated out on barges and lowered down onto the seabed. The Beaufort gun arrived first to keep an eye on the others as they were being put into place.
And how long did it take them to construct the towers?
Amazingly, they constructed 21 towers in 3 months.
That is incredible.
Incredible speed. And then they were floated down river and kitted out with the internals and workings of the fort.
And how long were they in operation for?
Well, from 43 to the end of the war. Then they had a maintenance crew on board till 1958, and then they decided that they weren't required anymore and just abandoned.
And how successful were they in achieving that?
They were very successful, especially Red Sands, because it was nearer the coast, and that's the way the German army came through, the Air Force came through. And so that got the most hits, as it were.
How many?
Well, we think 21 planes and quite a few flying bombs. But bearing in mind that the flying bombs were coming at 400 mile an hour, which is quite low. So you kind of didn't get a lot of chance before you saw them and had to shoot at them. And I think they probably missed quite a few, but you know, they've got a fair amount. They've also got supposedly got a submarine as well. The water here is about 5 meters deep, so you can't get too much. You need to get the submarines into the right channels to get into the river.
You're listening to Tales of the Thames here on Boat Radio with me, Michael John. I'm on my way to visit the red sand forts in the Thames estuary, which were built during the Second World War to help defend London from attacks by the Luftwaffe. David Phillips, the secretary of Project Red Sand, a group of volunteers trying to preserve the forts, explains what life was like for the soldiers who manned them.
From my understanding, they used to be sort of, we think there were 6 weeks on and 2 weeks off, but then they changed it to 4 weeks on and 2 weeks off because the crew were getting a little bit crazy, especially the ones in the army, in the navy forts, because they were below deck level. So a lot of time was spent in the legs, where the sleeping accommodation was. And they started, the officers of the day said, well, we'll try and keep them busy then. So they came up with great ideas of making things, knitting things and making toys.
Okay, so they're basically just hanging around waiting for something to happen, at which point there'd be emergency.
Well, there's quite a lot of people on there, really. At the height, there's about 238 rankings on there, including the officers.
So fairly safe from U-boats because of the shallowness of the water. So the only real threat would be from aircraft.
Yeah.
But it'd be very hard to spot, presumably, because of where it is.
Well, we think probably the 21 shot down is probably because they didn't realise that they were there. And so don't go that route, you know. So if they don't come flying over, then they don't... they can't obviously shoot at them. The actual 3.7-inch guns could fire a shell 7 miles up into the air. It's quite an amazing feat, really. You have a searchlight tower at Fervis Point with all the generators on it, and then you have gun towers around, 4 gun towers, and a Beaufort's tower, again, with a different set of guns on it, and the control tower in the middle.
And presumably all interlinked?
Interlinked by a walkway, which is now demised and gone.
Of course.
It started to sort of fall apart in the 60s, really, the early part of the 60s. And it had a unique system where it had recoil on it, so that it, when the guns fired, the walkway would move backwards and forwards to take the strain of the recoil, because the tower would move and sway.
Thinking about the towers now, what kind of condition are they in?
Well, we can only access one of the gun towers, gun tower number one, at the moment, because we were lucky to get a company called Molan Marine at the time to pay for the landing stage that they built, which was about £50,000. So which is still there, and we can access that gun tower number one. We've got a bridge that goes across to the control tower, but it's very flimsy, and you can't really walk on it now because the boards that went across the middle of it have been removed because they were quite heavy, and the bridge would start to sway in the wind.
Right.
And so the Portland Authority said we had to remove those, which has been done. A couple of the guys have ventured across anyway since then, and it's not that safe. Parts were falling off whilst they were there. So it's very difficult to ascertain at the moment.
So, I mean, is the aim to fully restore all the towers?
That would be very nice, but we're probably going to look at least restoring one of them and then work our way to the others. The trouble being, of course, is that there's a lot of decay. You know, the two radio stations run from... Our radio station was running here 2007, 2008, and in that time even, there's been quite a lot of decay in just 8 years.
Well, they're so exposed, aren't they?
They are, but they've been there 72 years, so you can see, really... I mean, they're very well made. They reckon that if they were maintained properly, they'd last 200 years. We've checked, we had the bases on the seabed checked, and they appear to be in very good condition. And the legs have recently been checked, and they seem to have built things, over-engineered them, really, so they've lasted the test of time.
It's not too long before we're underway again. Luckily, no permanent damage has been done to the ex-pilot's diesel engine. However, due to the problems, Captain Harmer decides that after sailing around the Red Sand Forts a few times, we should head back to shore. As we get nearer, he tells me more about how they were installed.
They were towed out here on floating concrete pontoons, then the valves were open and they were sunk. So they're not actually in the seabed, they're actually, the pontoons are still on the seabed themselves. So technically speaking, you could pump them full of air, and you could probably refloat them. They were way ahead of their time in their day.
Well, I mean,
they still are.
That's the thing. I mean, they have almost a kind of high tech look, don't they?
Yeah. They were given a design life of 70 years, and that's just about what they are now. And it's still there.
So there's all these windows in the side. I mean, how many rooms does each tower have in it?
Each tower's got about 6 rooms, 7 rooms. And if you look on the one there, you'll see there's new we've fitted new windows in that tower, and a lot of them up there. You see the windows up? You see the red oxide?
Yeah, yeah.
Most of the windows up there have been replaced in one tower.
So someone's written Red Sands Development on this?
Yeah, that was put there many years ago. Many years ago.
Red Sands Development Corporation?
Yeah.
Who were they?
Yeah, there's been a lot of ideas over the years of what would happen and what we'd like to do. And we've been disappointed quite a few times by different things that have happened. We've had a share of problems, that's for sure. We've had most of the older people now in the team have decided to call it a day, and now we've got a new team on now of youngsters. And
I'm surprised that they don't get public funding for something like this.
Well, again, we need the right sort of people that could apply for lottery grants.
Because it's such an important part of the heritage, isn't it?
Well,
I mean, it's unique.
It is. I mean, when you have a situation like the Turner Gallery we took out here, we get a massive amount of interest from the arts community for it all. And so I've often said that the Arts Council could come along and put a little bit of money into it maybe and preserve this for future generations. But I think maybe we just haven't got the right kind of people that know the right channels to go to for this kind of thing.
Right.
That's what we need, the kind of people with experience for this kind of fundraising. I mean, we're really just practical people, most of us, and I'm just a boatman.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's almost... You could almost imagine part of this being a hotel or something.
Oh, the idea's already been made for a hotel. There's been ideas for all sorts of things. But we thought our idea was the one you can see there with the aerial is to be a radio station. A lot of our people, like David there, Robin, are all radio hams and, you know, very much interested in that side of it. So it's always been their dream to turn it into into a radio station, which is where we've got the aerial. And then the next one, we had ideas for a seawater research station, a accommodation block, a museum. The idea was that we'd have different companies doing different things in every tower, and then link them all up, of course, as they were originally, with walks. And you would have actually a city on the sea.
Yeah, maybe get a helipad or something.
We've already got permission from the CAA to put a helipad on the middle one. So that's already there. Yeah, they've given us all the dimensions and all the details what they want for that. Obviously, it'd only be a light helicopter, but the kind of people that could afford a helicopter, it would be the kind of people probably would like to encourage. When you think about the amount of money that is wasted on different things, a couple of days footballers' wages could make all the difference for us.